guys, this is Eric Young, and you're listening to Booking the Territory.
Hey, this is Ring of Honor Superstar Donovan Dijak, and you're listening to Booking the Territory Pro Wrestling Podcast.
This is the one-man gang. You're listening to Booking the Territory Pro Wrestling Podcast.
This is Booking the Territory, a pro wrestling podcast hosted by Mike Mills, Heartbody Harper from Wildcat Sports and Entertainment, and the mentally irregular Doc Turner. This podcast is a mix of your topics and thoughts in the world of pro wrestling, along with interviews and discussions with current independent stars and your favorite stars from the past. And now, here's your host, Mike Mills.
Welcome back, everyone, for this week's episode of Booking the Territory Pro Wrestling Podcast, the pro wrestling podcast where pro wrestling's past meets pro wrestling's present. We have got a ton to cover as usual. It's Survivor Series weekend. NXT is happening in Toronto. Brock and Goldberg. Undertaker makes an appearance on SmackDown this week. The Billy Corgan situation with TNA seems to be resolved. And we are revisiting a topic that we covered a couple of weeks ago, and that is TNA Impact Wrestling's top five of all time. Why are we doing this? Because joining me this week is live audio wrestling co-host of Review America, Nate Milton. And you may ask, why am I covering the top five again? Well, Nate, to me, is a resident TNA expert and is far more knowledgeable about the history of TNA than Doc Harper I. So I said, you know what? Let's bring on Nate to talk about his top five from TNA, and I'll reintroduce my top five, and then we'll see where it's at. So, Brother Nate, welcome back to Booking the Territory. How's it going, man?
What's going on, Brother Mike? It is good to be here. Good to be back, should I say. I'm feeling good, man. I think we're going to have a fun week. We're going to keep the politics out of it, man, because you know, we don't need that. We need to feel good right about now. But I do think it's kind of funny, and this is going to be the only thing I'm going to say, Mike. Uh-oh. I do think it's funny that the first time we ever talked, it was regarding a WWE Hall of Famer that might have said some racist stuff. And now we are talking again after a big week for another WWE Hall of Famer that might have said some racist stuff. I'm just saying.
Oh, the irony, right?
It's funny how things work out.
Yeah, that's so true, because the first time we talked back in July or August of 2015, before we really knew each other and I hooked up with you and got you on the show, we didn't plan it like that when we booked it, but it just so happened that Hulk Hogan went rogue on us and decided to drop some expletives and have sex with his best friend's wife, and all kind of shit went down. But yeah, you are correct. We went from Hogan to Trump, and well, we're not going to get political on it, but that is a good fact that I did not realize until you brought it up. Jesus. Oh, man. Well, before we get started, I totally botched something with the show this week. And Nate, this is not on you. This is completely on me. Our friends at Old Wrestling Pick on Twitter ran a poll for us, and the poll was about the best wrestling belts or favorite wrestling belts of all time. I'd intended on doing this week's show on the top five belts of all time with Doc and Harper and myself, but I got the dates all mixed up since Harper and Doc aren't here this week, as you can tell, because it's just Nate and I didn't say, hey, Doc, hey, Harper, how are you? In any case, Nate, let me ask you, between the belts I'm about to list, because Old Wrestling Pick ran this poll for me, and it got almost 1,000 votes, which would be your top pick of your favorite belt? Now, I have an idea of what you're going to pick, but I'll tell you the four that were listed, and then I'll give the results on this week's show. So one of them was the NWA World Title, the old one, you know, with the globe on the center medallion at the very top. The other one was the first WWF belt that Hogan won, the green belt, if you remember that one. Then we had the AWA belt, the one that Zbyszko had, and then the old NWA TV title was the other belt that was in the poll. Now, Nate, do you want to tell me which one's your favorite before I tell you what the results of that poll were?
See, first of all, I'm a little bit disappointed that the Jeff Hardy Immortal Belt was not one of the options.
And well, if you're disappointed, be disappointed with me, because I was the one who came up with those four choices.
I think out of those four, it's going to be either the NWA title or the TV title, and I think I might be inclined to lean towards the TV belt.
You know, I had a feeling you would lean towards one of the NWA titles, and it's no secret. We are Southern wrestling fans. I grew up in New Orleans. You know, you grew up in the South, too. So, obviously, the NWA was very prominent for us growing up.
Yes.
I will tell you this. The NWA world title got 55% of the vote. The NWA TV title, I'm taking that's the one with the red lettering or even the red strap. That one got the 21%. The AWA title came in at 13%, and the green WWF belt came in at 11%. So,
okay.
But I would have said to either the – I think I did vote for the world title, but I can see why the NWA TV title would have won too, because that was a pretty sweet-looking belt as well.
Yeah, that's back when that belt actually meant something.
Yeah, back when wrestling meant something too. Current product. Now it's just, geez. But yeah, so good stuff on that one. So again, shout out to at Old Wrestling Pick on Twitter, friends of ours. They put the poll up for us after I sent it to them, and just want to give them a good shout out. Go follow them. They run a lot of interesting polls, and they post a lot of old picks. Really, really good guys from there, and like I said, they always share, and they post good stuff. So give them a follow, everyone listening. All right, Nate, I said we weren't going to talk politics, and we're not. But next topic, Joey Styles. Did you have a particular take on the Joey Styles situation and him being fired after his comments at the Evolve show last week?
See, now this is where I'm going to need your help on this one, Brother Mike, because I saw a lot of chatter on Twitter about Joey Styles and him getting canned. And you know, I got so many shows, Mike, so I think I was either recording or I was editing or I was setting up something with a guest. So that story kind of fell through the cracks for me. So could you kind of break down what went down with that?
Well, okay, so from what I understand, he basically made a comment on a live mic while talking to Stokely Hathaway and said, you know, the line that Donald Trump is now famous for, our president-elect, grab him in the pussy.
Ah.
And Joey got fired for it. Now, here's the thing. Obviously, I don't condone that from President-elect Trump or Joey Styles. In Joey Styles' case, he was on a live mic, and from what I gather, he was specifically told not to bring that up, and he did. So that's insubordination. Now, Nate, at your job, if you're insubordinate, what is the boss man going to do?
Yeah, you're going to get fired. Yeah, so okay, I get it then. Yeah, no, I don't feel sorry for Joey because he's a professional. Like, yeah. he's great at his job, but if your boss explicitly tells you something, then you go and do it anyway. You got to deal with the consequences. Like, I've been calling high school football for about 15 years down here in Virginia. And there are certain words on a school channel, on a school broadcast, that I know I can't say.
Right.
So if I decide to make a joke or get funny or I'm feeling myself and I say it anyway, they got a right to fire me because I knew the rules going in.
Right. Exactly. Exactly. So, yeah. And that was the thing with Joey. I saw people say, here's the thing. I saw people saying that, you know, Joey shouldn't have got fired. And then I saw people saying he should have got fired. My thing is, it's wrestling. So it's kind of – there's a lot of crazy things said in wrestling, and I actually think sometimes crazy stuff said in wrestling actually sells wrestling better. I mean, I don't want it to be sterile because that's the problem with the WWE product right now. So with Joey, if he just would have said that and not been instructed not to, then that would have been a different story. But his boss told him don't do it – not his boss, but, you know, Sapolsky supposedly told him don't do it, and he did it, so – hey, what do you expect them to do? I mean, they fired him for that. So that's my take on it. So I didn't know if you had caught wind of it, but that's what happened. I may send you a tweet about it because it was all over Twitter, man. It was crazy.
Yeah, I saw Twitter blowing up, but I was like, hey, I can't message you right now, Twitter. I got to grab these podcasts by the pussy, man, and get these out to the people.
Oh man, Nate breaking it down. Got to grab the podcast by the pussy. Oh Nate, that's a good one. That's a good one. All right, so Nate, how have you been doing on keeping up with the WWE product these days?
It's getting harder and harder, man. Like, you know, obviously, you know, I got the podcast. I got my regular 9-to-5 job. You know, I do football down here. You know, I'm getting older, so my time span seems to be getting shorter day by day. So I stay involved. Like, I watch what I need to watch to stay up on the storylines, but there's no way I'm watching everything like I used to. Like, I used to watch Raw, SmackDown, NXT, the Talking Smack, and that lasted about a week. And I was like, nah, I can't do it, man. I'm out. And so the way I watch wrestling now, Mike, I watch Raw pretty much all the way through on Monday nights, and I just flip back and forth between that and Monday Night Football. Tuesdays, I'll have SmackDown on in the background while I'm working on other stuff, and I watch Impact. And those are my three shows for the week.
Yeah, it's becoming harder and harder, Nate, and it's not helpful that the product is very stale. And we haven't been talking a lot about the product lately on this show. We've been talking a lot more classic wrestling, but I'm having trouble like you. And then here's the thing. Think about this weekend. Pointed this out a few months back. So this weekend we got NXT, we got Survivor Series, we got Raw, and then on Monday, obviously, not the weekend, and then we got SmackDown Tuesday, right? Well, if we add that up, Nate, we got 2 hours of NXT. We got about 4 hours with the pre-show of Survivor Series. That's 6 hours there. Add another three, we got 9 with Raw. And we got 11 hours with SmackDown. I just don't know what adult has that much time in their schedule, especially an adult like me that has children, you know, and involved in youth sports and stuff. I mean, it's hard for you, and you're a single man. So it's unrealistic. So I'll say this. How many hours are you going to be able to possibly watch of all of the programming that WWE is going to produce this weekend?
Honestly, I may catch TakeOver. No, actually, I'm not even going to watch TakeOver the night it happens. I'll watch the main event later. But I watched the main event, and I watched the Mickey James Oscar match, because those are probably the two matches those two in the tag match that I'm excited for, but I'll watch those later. I'll watch Survivor Series the night of, and probably have it on in the background and get bored and do other stuff, because you know, I'm sure we'll talk about it here in a little while, Mike, but I haven't really been set on fire by this build for the Survivor Series, but as a wrestling fan, it's kind of force of habit, so I'll have the Survivor Series on. But then, you know, it's not going to take up a lot of my weekend. Like, it'll be background noise while I'm doing other things, but unfortunately, it's not going to be my focus. And I think maybe, you know, 10, 15 years ago, certainly, you know, a weekend this big, I would be, you know, watching everything pretty much wall to wall.
Yeah, you'd be pretty hyped for it. I agree. 20 years ago, I mean, I'd be hyped for it too. We'll jump to it. I mean, let me ask this. You kind of answered my next question, because I was going to ask you if you were more excited for TakeOver or Survivor Series, but it sounds like you're like, man, I'm not even going to watch TakeOver on live, and Survivor Series will be on in the background. So that's a passive. That was a passive way of saying Survivor Series to me, is if I heard you correctly. Is that a safe assumption?
Yeah, I don't know what it is in this day and age, especially the last couple of weeks, Brother Mills, where I've got two bad options and I got to choose between one or the other. Because Survivor Series and NXT TakeOver, like, I'm sure the wrestling will be fine. And that's something that, you know, we've talked about for a while now, like, in terms of bell to bell. The technical aspects of these matches are probably as good as they've ever been.
Yeah,
but the stories just aren't compelling like they used to be. So I think individually I'm more excited for the individual matches on TakeOver more, but for an overall event, Survivor Series probably gets a slight nod.
You actually nailed it. I've said that for the longest. The actual wrestling today in the ring, it's never been better in any product. I mean, unless it's an independent shit show somewhere, which there's some of those out there still. But you're talking WWE or Ring of Honor or Impact. The wrestling is second to none. And WWE does a phenomenal job in the ring. It's just the storytelling that's killing it. And that goes into what I'm about to say with Survivor Series. I just... You know, I'll tell you, because I was going to ask, like, what your give-a-care meter was with Survivor Series. on a scale of, say, 1 to 10. Mine, if 10 was I can't wait and 1 is I don't give two shits about this crap, I would probably rate it a 3.5. Am I going to watch it? I'm going to contradict the 3.5. Yes, I will watch Survivor Series. I'll probably have that on, and I'll be watching the football game too. I don't even know who plays Sunday. But, yes, I will probably watch it. But I just am – yeah, I'm just so down on it. The build of it is not really intriguing to me. How about you, Nate?
I think I might be – around a 4.5, maybe a 5. And let's see. Looks like Sunday night is Packers Redskins, so I'm not too keen on that. I'm not too keen on that matchup either.
Yeah.
I don't want to see a hurt Aaron Rodgers and completely mediocre Kirk Cousins.
Yeah.
I'll probably be more interested in Survivor Series.
They got lucky on that one. They got lucky on that.
Yeah.
If
the game, if Seattle New England. Was the game this week? Oh, my goodness.
They got lucky on that. I just realized it when you said that.
Yeah.
I mean, if you had Seattle, New England, or, you know, I'm not a Dallas Cowboy fan, but, I mean, I'll give them their credit. They're a draw. If you had Dallas and somebody else, I mean, they got lucky.
Dallas and Pittsburgh game from this Sunday was on Sunday night.
Yeah. That matchup is a little bit more marquee, they're taking a hit. But they got lucky. I mean, unless you're in the Washington and Green Bay markets, no disrespect to those people there. But nationally, I would say that's not a marquee matchup. So you're right about that.
No. Yeah, so they'll get Mr. Anderson's buy rate for that game. but this Survivor Series, man, I don't know about you, Mike, but I get that they're kind of trying to bring back the old school teams. But the way they did it with baby faces and heels on the same team for every match, and every match is telling the same story. Can these guys work together? Can these girls work together? Can these tag teams work together? It just isn't really that exciting to me.
It's terrible. Look, perfect example was last night. Let me break some news to the listeners of Booking the Territory. I love Sasha Banks, for everybody who don't know. Nate knows because he sees my tweets. All right. Now that we got that out the way. That's my thing, man. So Sasha and Charlotte just come off Hell in a Cell not that long ago. And Sasha and Charlotte have had this heated thing back to NXT. And they brought it up to the main roster. And their first women to main event, a pay-per-view. And they supposed to hate each other. These two women are going to go from fighting in a cage not even 3-4 weeks ago. I can't remember how long ago it was. It wasn't that long ago. To all of a sudden now, they're going to be on the same team because we're booking to the stipulation of the fact that we're in Survivor Series and SmackDown needs to meet Raw with the women. So now they're getting along. Nate, you and I ain't never had beef. But if I had beef with you, ain't no, there is almost nothing that is going to make us within 3 weeks' time go, Nate, I like you. I'm going to fight with you against that guy. It's just not going to happen. It's not realistic.
Especially if we were just fighting in a cage.
Right, that's what I'm saying. It was a big match. We're not talking about you and I went in and like, all right, you know, we did the code of honor, like Ring of Honor. We shake each other's hand, and we're going to match together. And you know, I put you over, you put me over. No, this ain't what happened. These women were in a cage. Sasha got slung around like a rag doll. Come on, man. Now I'm supposed to believe they're going to get along for one night to fight for Raw's honor. Give me a fucking break.
Man, have they even said what the winning team gets? Like,
Steph.
Wasn't it the draft pick thing they were bouncing around for a while?
No, and see here, I'm drawing a blank now that you asked it, but Stephanie said made it like almost like at least the men were fighting for their job. They, you know.
Yeah, she said that, but I think it was a while back, and they probably dropped it. But when they were first setting up the teams, they were like the winning team would get three draft picks.
You know what? That goes to show you how terrible of ability is, because I don't even remember that at all.
And they've completely dropped that. Like, I think they might have actually said it one week, and then the next week somebody was like, nah, we ain't gonna do that.
It's terrible, Nate. I mean, how am I supposed to buy into it? And again, I got the network, and I'm really considering dropping it. I'm more than ever I've been considering dropping it. Just because I the product's stale. You're giving me just on Raw every single month 12 hours of programming. I mean, why do I need to watch another 3-4? I can get the big pay-per-views. You give them free every time I turn around. I can go create another email address and put another card in. And if I really want to get Mania, I mean, think about it.
Yeah.
You've got it. You've got your business model. Well, you got your network set up like that now. I could do that if I wanted to. I'm trying not to. And then there's the other pettiness of me with WWE, where they just need to load the old content, like Mid-South and World Class. They need to load it all. I'm tired of hearing bullshit. It's got to be digitized, man. You're a billion-dollar company. Digitize that shit and get it out there. But no, Nate, I agree. The build hasn't been good. And, you know, it's funny. You did 4.5. I did 3.5. And I that's just how I'm feeling right now. I'm not sold on it.
And honestly, I would say out of that 4.5, at least 2.5 points of that is for Goldberg and Brock.
Glad you said that, which leads me into my next thing, because with Brock and Goldberg, what was your initial thoughts when it was first announced, and what did you think after Goldberg cut his first promo about the match, making it official between Goldberg and Lesnar, when Goldberg said, "You're not only next, you're last." And then this past Monday, the last promo that they had, now that we're on the eve of this, are you more optimistic about it? Because I got a feeling, and I don't know this answer, I have a feeling you recall the first one and may not be high on it because of what the first match was at that point.
Yeah.
So where are you at with the whole Goldberg-Brock match?
I think my thoughts about the match might be the same, whereas I don't think this is going to be a 5-star classic. I'm kind of hoping for safety. Like I'm like a soccer mom. Like I don't give a damn which team wins. I just want the kids to come home safe. I just don't want Goldberg going out there and getting himself hurt. But I think in terms of the story, which is what we were talking about earlier, the story to me has been really strong. They had that one misstep in Minneapolis, which they should have seen coming.
Yes. That was
but
terrible.
That was ridiculous. But other than that, man, like, you could make the argument that these have been, in terms of mic work and building a story, this has been one of Bill Goldberg's best feuds.
I remember the Monday Night Wars and Goldberg at that time. This is some of Bill Goldberg's best work on a microphone. I mean, he's done a complete 360 from the days we remember. To me, I mean, he's
honestly, I think a lot of that comes from, you know, since WCW closed, or even since his time in the WWE, he's done more TV. He's done, his podcast, obviously. So I think he's more comfortable talking. I think the other thing is they're not asking him to play a character here. They're just saying, you know, what would you say in this situation? You know, you want to do this for your son and for your wife. And you know, this is what your last time. So I think they've done a good job of setting him up to succeed. And, you know, to Bill's credit, man, he's knocked it out of the park.
He's done a great job. I agree. I told Doc after it was announced, I remember when they said it was going to happen and then he came on Raw. They were leaning towards it happening. Obviously, he was coming on Raw to announce it. I was thinking to myself, I'm not really interested in this. I saw this match a few years back. Well, what was it, 01, 02? I can't remember the exact year. I'm just not into it. I'm not feeling it. Doc despises Goldberg to a point. He's like, I don't like him. Goldberg didn't do anything that I wouldn't have done. If somebody would have gave me the spot that they gave him back then, I would have ran with it too, just like he did.
Mm-hmm.
Not that I look like Goldberg. My point is, you can't be mad at the talent for taking what was given to him. I mean, they all.
How about Gilbert? You could have been Gilbert, brother.
It might have been closer to Gilbert.
Come out with the little sparklers.
Yeah. I still will never forget that, man. That was some great. That was great entertainment. But I remember thinking, man, I'm not looking forward to this. You know, come on, man. This isn't going to do it for me. But when Goldberg cut that first promo, I was like, this was really, really intense and good. And it was believable. And then even, Monday night this week on the 14th of November, another really, really good one between the two of them. They didn't touch. I like that. So I am looking forward to that. Whereas a couple weeks ago, I was like, meh, I don't really give a care about it. But I'm looking forward to it. I do want to see what they do with it. Hopefully they don't mess it up and whatever they're calling. But I'm looking forward to it. So I agree. Of everything on the show, I think that is obviously it's the number one thing I'm looking forward to, because these Survivor Series matches, I think the matches will be good, but I just don't think it's going to be the storytelling. I mean, I just don't know. Who knows? Yeah, that may surprise me.
Like, I think first with the Goldberg and Brock match, like, what I really liked about what they did on Raw was they finally were able to make Heyman and Brock the heels. Brock not giving the people what they wanted, not getting in there and slugging it out with Goldberg. You know, they finally were kind of able, so we could get this dynamic. And obviously in Toronto, it might be a little different. But I think both guys will get their cheers, but I think Goldberg will get, you know, the bigger share, which is what it should be, you know, because he's the guy coming back. But the other thing, when you talk about the rest of the card, I think they try to get a little too cute with this, you know, building up the rivalry between SmackDown and Raw. It's like, okay, if there was one match or two matches that were show versus show, that's cool. But to have all of these matches where the shows are going head to head, it kind of feels like that old pay-per-view bragging rights that they had, which I don't think anybody remembers fondly.
Yeah, I don't even remember it. I'm like, what?
But like for me, and obviously some people might say it's because I'm biased, because I'm a big Sting fan, but I haven't felt energized for a Survivor Series match since 2014 with the Authority versus Team Cena.
Yeah, that was a good one, Nate.
Because it had a good story. You know, they kept building up the stuff with the guys. And if you're with Cena, you're going to get fired. And they had that whole thing with Dusty and Big Show that was part of the lead up to it. And then at the end, you know, Dolph Ziggler gets this big moment because Sting helped him out. And, you know, granted, they didn't do a damn thing with Ziggler after that. But just for that one match and the build up to the match, I thought that was excellent.
That actually, it's funny you say that, because I have taken since the Monday Night Wars ended and WCW went under, I had taken frequent long-term sabbaticals from professional wrestling, at least the major products, with WWE, WWF, whatever. And I will say this, when my son started watching it, I want to say early 2014, he was really getting into it at that time, I remember, because he always wanted to watch it on Mondays. I'll never forget the build-up to that. And that's kind of when I was first getting back into it after a long time off. And that build was really good. Like you said, they didn't do anything with Ziggler after, which kind of sucks, because I still think he gets mistreated. And, you know, they beat him again on SmackDown this week, and now Miz is champion. But I agree, that was the last good one. You know, you look at this one, and you got Team Raw with Owens, Jericho, Reigns, Strowman, and Seth against AJ, Dean, Bray Wyatt, Randy Orton, Shane McMahon with James Ellsworth. You got another match with Charlotte, Bayley, Nia Jax, Alicia Fox, and Sasha with Dana Brooke against Team SmackDown, Nikki, Bella, Becky Lynch, Alexa Bliss, Carmella, and Naomi. And then you got the Team Raw, which is the third one, which is New Day, Sheamus and Cesaro, Gallows and Anderson, Enzo and Big Cass, and the Shining Stars are in this against Slater, Rhino, the Hype Bros, American Alpha, the Usos, and Breezango. Now, I just read all that out, and that was a lot to get through. So if you think about how boring it was listening to me doing that, think about what is the real payoff to any of these teams winning that. And I say all that to say, that's why I'm just like at a 3.5. I'm just What am I supposed to look? And you know what, Nate? They may surprise me. Those matches may be so great, I may forget that the story buildup was not the greatest. You know what I'm saying?
Right. But it's funny because, like, I was looking for my fast forward button when you was just reading the names of all them damn teams.
Right.
Because it's like, without stakes, what does it matter? You know, because the matches that I am interested in, besides Goldberg and Brock, are the one where they've given us stakes. You know, the Cruiserweight match.
Yeah.
And the match for the IC title.
Yeah.
Like, those matches have stakes. Yep. So they. Yep. It means something. Whereas with these Survivor Series matches, yeah, there's you know, bragging rights for the show, but if they're not going to do the draft thing, then what else does it mean?
I don't know, Nate. And then even the IC match, too, you point that one out. I feel like there's no way Miz loses it. He just won it. He's not going to lose it to Sami Zayn. They're not going to hot potato it that quick. I mean, they may. Who knows? But I don't see it happening. I mean, I feel like
what's the point of having both belts on Raw?
Yeah, well, that's true too. Because then you'd have to move. Because now the U.S. title is already on Raw. You'd have to move the IC title to Raw. Who knows? You know what? We're speculating, but ain't no telling what they'll do.
Yeah.
You never know. They may do it just out of spite. I think I've heard John Pollock say that before. It's like if people get to talking about it too much, that's the reason they'll do just the opposite. I don't want to say that's not the words he's used, but I feel like he said that on a review of Raw recently, where it was something to that effect. You know what I mean?
Yeah, and you know, talking with you know, people like Brian Mann or Greeny, like if I don't know why they have this mentality, you know, and when I say they, I mean Vince,
right?
But it's like if something is not a huge surprise, then he doesn't want to do it. And it's like the people that are, you know, actively reading the dirt sheets or subscribing to the Observer or listening to the podcast where people are previewing these big events, that's, you know, it's a significant part of your audience, but it's not the majority of your audience.
Right.
You know, most of your audience is not, unfortunately, you know, as much as I would like them to be listening to this show right here or the shows on Live Audio Wrestling, you know, they are the casual viewers. You know, they're the kids. You know, the kids ain't putting on a podcast. So the surprise thing doesn't work for them. And here's the other thing, though. Even if I know what's going to happen, and this is the argument I used to have with people when Impact results would come out. You know, just because I know what's going to happen on paper, it could play out a totally different way when I watch it.
Totally.
And, you know, like I would read some of the stuff that was going on with the Final Deletion, like some of the notes people were sending. I was like, okay, this sounds terrible, but I'm not going to, you know, shit on it until I get a chance to see it.
Right.
And then when I saw it, it was crazy.
Yeah.
And it was enjoyable. So I would hope that they don't do that just because I think that's what somebody said they did with Sasha and Charlotte. And that really made the ending of Hell in a Cell fall flat, in my opinion. You know,
you want to talk about something that pissed me off to no end. That, as Jim Cornette says, hokey horse shit. God, I hated that finish. Let the woman have her fucking moment in her hometown.
Yep.
God damn, Vince.
Yeah. And what they did with that is because the whole reason that match went last was so they could have this big historical moment. And if Sasha had won in Boston, you have this big moment that people remember. But now, because Charlotte won, it's still historical, but to me, it becomes like a trivia note. Like, it's not something people are really going to remember 10, 15, 20 years from now.
I've heard, I totally agree, and I've heard probably 50 people say that same thing. Like, it's like the specialness of the moment evaporated when Charlotte won.
Mm-hmm.
And I mean, damn, you could have – what harm would it have been to just take it off of Sasha a week later or 2 weeks later?
Yep.
Or at the next pay-per-view? No, they had to just – and it was flat. Oh, it was so flat. The way it went.
That could have been the match of Survivor Series instead of the women's team match. It could be, you know, the rubber match or whatever for Sasha and Charlotte.
And you still could have did but then that would have went against the point of them doing Raw and SmackDown at Survivor Series too.
But I would ask you, what is the point?
Oh, I agree. Yeah, I don't disagree with that. But that was,
like, think about that. Like, if you have a show where you got Brock and Goldberg, you got Sasha and Charlotte, you know, they could even advertise it. It's the last time. You can do a big tag team Survivor Series match, and then you got your Raw versus SmackDown Survivor Series match. That's a much better show than the one we're talking about.
Yeah, that's true, because you'd have had those two women there on there again. That's doing their thing. And, I mean, we've seen it. They have really, really good matches. So, Nate, I don't know. It goes to show you. It's just I complain about WWE every single week. I mean, look, to segue, 2 weeks ago they pinned Brian Kendrick in a tag match, who's their current Cruiserweight champion. They pinned the New Day in a match, which are their current tag team champions. And then lastly, they pinned Charlotte in a tag match. So three of their champions were pinned in one night on Raw. I bitched and complained about it over and over again, screamed at the top of my lungs. I mean, they just pinned their champs clean repeatedly. Let me ask you, what are your thoughts on that? Because I swear to God, even though I shouldn't swear, that it just wasn't like that in the old days where you just decided to pin your champion clean all the time. How am I supposed to take the belt serious if you're constantly pinning your champion?
And the times where the champ was pinned clean or taken to a draw, it was for a reason, you know, like with Sting and Flair. You know, yeah. You were setting something up. You know, it wasn't just a throwaway match on a show that, you know, is too long anyway.
Right. Well, that's what I've made this argument, too. That's what happened when you have 3 hours and 15 minutes to fill every single Monday. That's the type of stuff you throw out there. So, I don't know. That's where I'm at. Did I lose you, Nate?
Nah, Raw lost me.
Thought I lost you for a minute. All right, Nate, let's transition, man. So, you know, we talked about Brock segment on Raw. We didn't talk about Undertaker. I know you say you caught the important stuff from SmackDown. What was your take on the Undertaker segment coming out, sounding like he's going to be back now?
Yeah, this was interesting because, well, first of all, it was interesting because I thought he was going to come out and cut a promo on LeBron James for standing him up at that Cavaliers game. but it did sound very much like Taker is going to be there on a regular basis. And I don't know what the benefit of that is, Mike, because obviously, you know, we both got respect for The Undertaker, but part of what makes him special is he's not around all the time.
Yeah.
And so if he's there every week, like, I get that you want to boost your ratings, but at some point, yeah, it'll be hot for a little bit, but you're going to get, you know, a law of diminishing returns once people get used to seeing Undertaker around all the time. And you're going to but you're probably going to make that WrestleMania match less special because, hey, we've just seen the guy for like the last 3 months.
That's true, too. I didn't think about the long-term effect from Mania. But the thing is, too, if they protect him, which I don't know if they'll do, if they protect him and maybe don't roll him out there every single week, that keeps him special. I think that's the key of it all. You can bring him back on a regular basis and if he's going to work some house shows, but I don't know if you're going to want to bring him back every single, you know, Tuesday night if he's going to be on SmackDown.
No, but I did like how he was kind of like, it was almost one of those Mick Foley speeches, like one of those rallying speeches before the big event. Like, I liked him being kind of like, it's an interesting role that they really haven't done with The Undertaker before. Like, every now and then, you know, that he's the veteran or he's the you know, the phenom or whatever. But to have him kind of be like the locker room leader or, you know, the conscience of the show, like, I think that's an interesting role for him.
Yeah. Yeah, no, I didn't think about that. That's true, too. It'll be interesting to see. I'm really interested to see where they put him in Mania.
That to me, though, like, just kind of not even speaking about the TV show, that to me says that SmackDown's ratings are too hot. If you're going to, you know, bring out the Undertaker. And didn't he just, like, have a surgery?
No, I don't think. Are you talking about that picture that was on Twitter?
Yeah.
Yeah, no, I don't. I think that got mistaken the wrong way. But I think I thought I read the crutches were for the girl he was in the picture with.
Okay. See,
yeah.
See, America, that's what happens when you get your news from Facebook and Twitter. Hashtag message.
Yeah, I think, don't quote me on that, but I think that's what happened. I think that's what happened.
Okay,
yeah.
Okay, then.
But I will tell you this. You're talking about the SmackDown ratings. They did a 1.95 this week, and Raw did a 1.98. Now, that was up from the previous week with SmackDown. So, yeah, I know
SmackDown got killed on election night.
Oh, buried. Buried. I mean, you're going to expect that because the election, which, you know, you got the Trumpster, you know, cutting wrestling promos and being a pro wrestling manager. I mean, it was what it was. But, yeah, you got to expect that. I said we weren't going to talk politics. So that's the only statement I'll make. If you want political views, go listen to Nate Milton and Brian Mann on Review America on Live Audio Wrestling that just dropped this week.
I'm saying between Review America and the Kings of Sport, I spent the last week talking politics for about 3.5 hours on podcast, so you can find my opinion there.
You can find your opinion. All right, Nate, that's enough of WWE talk at this point. Let's talk some TNA in the top five. So first, it seems that Anthem has settled with Billy Corgan. Last time we talked, you and I, you were basically looking forward to Corgan maybe getting control. I kind of was too. But that didn't happen. So how in the flying fuck does Dixie keep pulling a rabbit out of her hat?
And I know you just said we weren't going to talk politics, but I think maybe my favorite tweet from last week was you know, the fake TNA creative Twitter feed.
I've seen it. Yeah,
the guy was like, America's saying, what are we going to do with an inexperienced leader? And TNA is like, hey, you'll survive. They're like, you know what, we gonna be all right. But yeah, Dixie. And I think what it is with Dixie is she is good in a boardroom.
Yeah.
And I think that, you know, she can kind of spin. I mean, hell, that's what she did before she got into wrestling. You know, she was a PR person.
Yeah.
So, you know, she knows how to put on a good public face, especially, you know, when you get in these meetings in these boardrooms. And I think this is a blessing and a curse, man. Like, I'm happy that the company has a partner that'll keep them afloat and, you know, really invest in them. But at the same time, I am worried that they put their faith once again in Dixie Carter. And she is not the person, you know, in my opinion, to take this company forward. And, you know, you can say a lot about Billy Corgan. Like, he's not perfect by any stretch. Again, why do we always come down to two bad choices? He's not perfect by any stretch. I sense a theme, Brother Mills.
Yeah.
But I think, you know, even the locker room was at least willing to give Billy the benefit of the doubt, you know, because he was pushing for some different things and pushing, you know, to, I guess, rebrand the company after, you know, selling the tape library. If he was able to work out a deal with the WWE, he was going to rebrand the company. And so I think now that Dixie is firmly back in charge, at least for now, you know, I think they still got to figure out what to do with her. Cause you can't have Dixie Carter be making these day-to-day wrestling decisions. Cause she's shown you for 10, 15 years that she's not qualified for that job. But I do think now that Dixie's back, it's probably a depressing thing, you know, to be in that locker room where it's like, okay, we had this hope and we, you know, we had this promise of change and now we're stuck with Dixie.
I mean, if you saw Mike Bennett's tweet, it was like, well, back to, I forgot exactly what he said, but it was not a positive one. And then Maria Kanellis Bennett also tweeted something not so positive. Now, they could have been talking about something else. But it just so happened that it coincided with exactly when the news broke that Corgan was not going to get control of it and because it was insolvent. Look, man, it is what it is. Like you said, blessing and a curse. She puts on a good hat when it's dealing with business people. You know, I do think the positive from this is I don't know how much money Anthem has and what kind of pocketbook they have, but I do think that's a good thing. Because TNA needs the money right now. They need a backing. And I think that's a positive. However, like you said, blessing and a curse. We got the old Southern Belle, Dixie Carter. She's back in the saddle.
But at least it looks like she paid Billy back. Because I ain't want to have to see that man get on Twitter and ask for his money again.
I mean, that dude, he had a point, though, with that. It's like, come on, man. Y'all told me y'all going to pay me. I mean, what's going on? He put him on blast. You got to admit.
Yeah, that's how you tell Billy didn't give a damn anymore. He was like, oh. So y'all want to kick me out? Okay, what about that money you owe me?
Billy gave zero fucks at that point. He was like, y'all going to pay me or what, dog? I was almost waiting for TNA to come back and say, I can put 10 on it.
Right. Yeah, Billy was like, you know, we can get into some gangster shit if you want, but I would prefer we settle this as gentlemen.
Yeah, that was a trip, man. That was some good stuff. All right, now that we got that out the way, Nate, so a few weeks back, a couple weeks ago, Doc and I and Harper along with us, we did our top five TNA talents of all time. And the list, it's basically a little subjective to a point, because I mostly went with what I considered homegrown. Now, that point is where it gets subjective, because some people may consider some people homegrown and others may not consider them homegrown. So what I will do is we will walk through our top five. Now, the listeners have heard my top five, but you are more of a TNA expert than me. So I am anxious to hear who you listed as your top five, starting at number five, and then we'll work our way up. So what we'll do is you'll give your five, I'll give my five, then I'll give my four, and I'll throw it back to you. You give your four. You see what I'm saying? We'll zigzag.
Okay.
That's how we always do it. So I will throw it at you first, and you give me, starting from number five, moving on up to one, who your number five top TNA talent would be of all time, and then why you feel that way.
Okay, and like you said, you know, we're primarily going with people that could be considered homegrown talent, so no Sting or a Kurt Angle on my list, even though, you know, those are certainly people that's important to TNA.
Right.
You know, I want to send an honorable mention to people like Austin Aries and Elix Skipper and Jay Lethal, Monty Brown, people that won't make my list, but that were very important to TNA. But I'm going to start off with a guy that has only been in TNA for 3 years, Brother Mills, and that is Ethan Carter III.
I hear that.
And the reason I'm putting him at number five in my all-time TNA top five is a couple reasons. One, because the dude's earned it. Like, I think, yeah, he hadn't been there the longest, but in 3 short years, he has certainly become one of the fixtures in his promotion. I think that his in-ring work is improving, and his character work has always been there.
Yeah.
The other reason I picked him, though, is because I think he serves as a good example for TNA in terms of the way that the freedom in that company can kind of help reinvent guys. You know, for the longest time, TNA had a bad rap of, oh, this is the company that just uses WWE castaways. And yeah, that's kind of true, but you got to look deeper, Mike, and I think you got to look at what they do with these people. And some of the people were just kind of a quick cash grab, like, you know, Kevin Nash and people like that. But I think TNA has a pretty good track record of revitalizing these dudes. You know, I'm looking at somebody like the Pope that was basically nobody in WWE. Mm-hmm. Or somebody like Bully Ray that kind of reinvented his whole career through TNA.
Right.
Or even Kurt Angle. But I think EC3 is a good example of that, because he was a guy that they kind of saw nothing for after NXT, and he came to Impact and definitely became one of the more entertaining characters out of the last 3 years. And he's had some really good matches, you know, with people like Sting and Angle and Rockstar Spud. You know, that match when they were in England, I guess it was last January now.
Yep. It's funny.
Still one of my favorite TNA matches.
It's funny you say that, because when we were doing the top five a couple weeks ago, which I don't think you've heard, Doc had EC3 on his list. Now, EC3 is not on mine, but it's more of a longevity thing, and not the fact that I don't think he's – I think he's good. I think he's great in the promotion. I think he's carried the promotion a lot. But Doc had mentioned him, and I immediately thought of the match that he and Spud had in England when he was just – the character and the heel that he played in that match against the underdog Spud was exceptional. The story they told really had you believing in that whole feud and match. It was incredible. And I put that, you know, while Spud played his part, I put that on EC3, man. That was great, great work. So I agree with that.
So who you got at number five?
My number five was I had Christopher Daniels as my number five, and I won't recite everything because everybody's heard, you know, kind of my description of why. But he is a four-time X Division champ, eight-time World Tag Team champ between the TNA and when it was known as the NWA World Titles, and some of his partners were Frankie Kazarian, obviously Low Key, James Storm, AJ Styles. But more than anything, what made me like Christopher Daniels was when he was able to pull off Curry, man. laughable gimmick, Nate, but
yeah,
that guy got Curry, man, over, and I just think something needs to be said about that.
Yeah, hey, I agree with that. To me, like, and the thing is, Daniels had a habit of that, man, like taking stuff that shouldn't work
right,
and making it work.
Yeah.
Like, him and Kazarian were the best part of that terrible Claire Lynch storyline.
Yeah, you see what I'm saying? They're able to, like, they can make magic out of, you know, crap.
He got an Appletini over.
Right. Yeah, it's so, and you have to look at the talent when they do things like that. When they get over, you know, I think Austin always says it, you know, it turned chicken shit into I can't even get it out. Basically, you make a chicken saddle out of chicken shit. That's what that guy can do. That's what Daniels can do. So I've always been a fan of Daniels. Now my number.
It's me.
Oh, go ahead.
I say one of the biggest mistakes that they ever made was not putting the belt on Daniels. I think it was when Jeff Hardy had the belt in Immortal, and Daniels had just come back and he had that great dive off of the top of the cage to help out AJ and James Storm and his buddies. But yeah, Daniels was so good. Like he just barely missed my list, but I definitely wouldn't have any argument with him being there.
Yeah, I always look up to him. A great talent. I mean, now he's doing great things in Ring of Honor. I believe they're the current. No, they're not the tag champs. I was about to say they're the current tag champs, but they're not. They are the previous tag champs at this point. But so that was my number five. Number four was Samoa Joe. I think about Joe. You know, he's the guy who, you know, Vince McMahon for many years would look at and say, this guy's fat and out of shape. And Joe obviously is not built like, you know, a Greek god. But you look at him in the ring and look at his tenure in TNA. And, of course, now he's in NXT doing great things. But Samoa Joe, my number four, it's kind of hard to hold down Samoa Joe when it comes to TNA.
Okay, I like that. And you may hear Samoa Joe on my list a little bit later.
I kind of figured that.
but my number four, I'm going to cheat here a little bit. Because if you ain't cheating, you ain't trying, brother.
I hear you.
And my number four is a tag team.
That's all right. And, yeah, you can do that. That's cool.
And it you know, they symbolize and they represent two of my favorite things in this world, Brother Mills, and that's beer and money. I got James Storm and Bobby Roode at number four. And originally I was going to put them both on the list, but then I was like, you know what? It's hard to separate these guys because not only were they the best tag team in TNA history, but you can make the argument out of the past decade that they're one of the best tag teams in the world.
I agree with that.
I thought they were good as heels or baby faces. They always got a good crowd reaction. And then individually, you know, both guys, former TNA World Heavyweight Champions. I thought that they had maybe one of the best feuds in TNA history that unfortunately was messed up at the end because that's what TNA tends to do sometimes. but yeah, I think the two of them were excellent. And it's kind of bittersweet that James Storm is back in TNA because I think, you know, he's a TNA original for a lot of people. You know, he's kind of the heart and soul of TNA, and he's really somebody, considering their audience and considering that they're, at least, you know, in Nashville, they were a Southern-based promotion, you would think that they would have done more with him, but it's kind of bittersweet to have him not go to NXT and reunite with Bobby Roode. But I'm going to put Beer Money as my number four on my list.
I can't disagree with that at all. Yeah, you'll definitely see one of those names on my list. I won't spoil it for you since you haven't heard it yet, but hard to disagree with Beer Money for damn sure. I mean, they had it. They were so over. And both of those guys are tremendous talents. I mean, it's hard to no one can knock them.
Like, this is how clueless TNA is, though, Mike. Like, James Storm had a video, like, not a fake video like Jeff Jarrett with My Baby Tonight. He had a real video with, who was it, Montgomery Gentry? That was playing on CMT. Like, and he was at the CMT Music Awards. And you still couldn't find a way to make this dude a bigger deal. Like, that's on you, TNA.
Yeah. And it was funny, as we go through the names that are on these lists, just think about all those names that are no longer there. I don't want to spoil it for anyone, but they've heard my list already. But just keep that point in mind as we go through this. All right, Nate, you're number three.
My number three is a guy that you just talked about, and that's Samoa Joe.
No, I'm not surprised.
You know, when you talk about feuds in TNA, you can't get too far on the list. Maybe even start the list with Samoa Joe and Kurt Angle. That was maybe their hottest match at the hottest point of the company's career, of the company's history. And again, unfortunately, they kind of burned it out.
Yeah.
But I always thought Samoa Joe was somebody that was so unique. You know, we knew this dude was a beast in what he did in ROH and what he did out in California on the independents. But when he got to TNA, it was like, it was a perfect match, because TNA was this promotion that was on the come up and they needed a unique superstar. You know, they had some great talent, but they needed some guy to, you know, kind of put them over the top. And Joe was that guy. And Joe needed a bigger platform for his talent, you know, a bigger showcase that could reach more eyeballs. And TNA gave him that. And I thought it was a really good marriage. Unfortunately, with the booking, they kind of dropped the ball on Joe. But, I mean, he held pretty much every title in the company. I really enjoyed him when he was part of the X Division. You know, that three-way match at Unbreakable with Joe, Daniels, and Styles is one of my favorite wrestling matches ever, you know, regardless of company.
Yeah.
Because it not only had great in-ring action, but, you know, you had the story of these three guys and the history of them. And you know, as you can see, when Joe is motivated, as we see in NXT, you know, he's still a really good performer. So Samoa Joe is number three on my list.
Yeah, and you said something with I had mentioned this the first time we did our TNA list, but it was Kurt Angle, that the feud with him. That was just money, and that was one of the reasons why I had him as, and that's why, you know, he was on my list. But he's done so much there. It's hard to, you can't deny him his rightful spot. So, all right, that was your number three. So my number three might be a shocker to you, because I know you haven't heard it yet, but I went with AJ Styles. And,
oh, okay.
Yeah, here's the thing, and it's not a slight on AJ. It's just kind of from my taste, the two people above him. You'd be hard pressed to argue, you know, those being where they're at. So, yeah, I went with AJ. I mean, you know, between the NWA World Heavyweight title when it was affiliated with TNA and the TNA World Heavyweight title, he was a 5-time TNA champion, world champion, 6-time TNA tag champ, 6-time X Division champ. Dude did it all. He's probably most people's number one TNA guy based on where he is now. I put him number three because I'm basing him off of his, you know, time specifically in TNA. So I went with AJ. I have a feeling, no spoilers, that he may be on Nate's list. So, Nate, if you want to hold your thoughts on AJ, that's fine. I'll go to my number two.
Okay.
All right. My number two, you had mentioned him as a part of a tag team, Beer Money. It was Bobby Roode. Bobby Roode is 2-time TNA World Tag Team Champion. He TNA King of the Mountain champion. Bobby Roode could do it all. I think he was an 8-time tag champion. 5 of those, you know, you talked about Beer Money, but 5 of those were with James Storm. So, and I mentioned this the last time when we did the list originally, I believe he holds the record for the longest world title reign in TNA history.
Yes, I believe that's so.
And dude, it's Bobby Roode, man. He was exceptional. And I'm not telling you anything you don't know. So Bobby Roode was my number two.
Okay. I can't argue that.
Yeah.
Now, my number two might surprise you, Brother Mike, and it kind of goes against our framework of guys that made their name in TNA, because this guy had a name before TNA, but you don't get TNA without this name, and that is JEFFJARRET Jeff Jarrett.
Wow. That's a shocker. That's a shocker. See, I'll tell you before you tell us why. Doc and I left him off, and it was mainly because we felt like he was established before. But to the point you're making, there is no TNA without Jeff Jarrett.
Yeah, and obviously, you know, he had bigger success or at least bigger fame with the WWF and also WCW.
Right.
Honestly, you might even be able to make the argument that he had bigger fame, you know, during his USWA run. But I would say with TNA, there was a couple things. And I think with Jeff Jarrett and TNA, people, when they look back at his time there, let the negatives override the positives. And I'll go ahead and put out the negatives. Like, he booked himself in the main event too many damn times. Because I think if you look at Jeff Jarrett, he is probably like an all-around B player. Like, he's good at everything, but I don't think he's great at anything, if that makes sense, Mike.
Yeah, no, it does. Like you can't, you look at him and you're like, okay, there's not anything he's like exceptional at that you would be like, oh, this stands out. Jeff Jarrett is great at doing this, but he is a solid, solid talent.
Yes.
That can do just about everything. He may not be the greatest at those things, but he is great in what he does. He's just not the greatest. That's yes. How I look at him.
And you know, when he was in there with the right opponent, you know, even when he was in his mid-40s, like, some of those matches he had with Kurt Angle were really amazing.
Yeah.
You know, two guys that are at an advanced age, quote-unquote, going out there and tearing the house down. He also was able to entertain. Like, one of the most entertaining skits or gimmicks or angles was when he was doing the Double J, Double MMA Challenge. And he'd go to the gyms and, you know, he'd call people out. And I think Boo Boo Stewart was one of the people he was trying to fight. And it's like, okay, this guy, when he's in his right slot, when he is, you know, an upper mid-card heel or, you know, the guy that's trying to keep the baby face from advancing to that main event scene, he's really, really good. I also think that when you look at what he did in terms of just behind the scenes, I don't think, you know, that can be taken away at all, because regardless of what you want to say about how he booked himself, when Jeff Jarrett was running TNA, you know, people always got paid. Staff, crew, the workers, they always got paid. Now, they didn't get paid maybe what they wanted to get paid, but they weren't missing checks when Jeff Jarrett and his daddy, to a lesser extent, were running the ship.
Yeah.
So I got to give it up to Jeff Jarrett, man. You know, he gets a lot of flack from the fans, and some of that is of his own fault, but I think, you know, you can't write the history of TNA without starting with Jeff Jarrett. And so, you know, I'm going to give him his props and put him at number two on my list.
Yeah, I can't. You know, I wouldn't have put him on mine, like I told you, because to me, he wasn't homegrown there. But there is something to be said about the fact that there's no TNA without him. So, and he obviously contributed a great deal to the promotion. Obviously, he's a TNA Hall of Famer. Whether you feel that's a legitimate Hall of Fame or not, he is one. And I would tend to agree. You know, I have to give Jeff Jarrett his due. It's funny. Doc had said something about Jeff Jarrett in relation to our Smoky Mountain show that we do. And it was that, you know, Tim Horner is a guy in Smoky Mountain who had a stake in the promotion. And, man, this guy put himself on TV. And if you ever watch his promos, they're just terrible. I mean, there's no other way to say it. We talk about it all the time on the Smoky Mountain show. And Doc said, you know, a guy like Jeff Jarrett takes crap because, you know, basically he was the promoter. But did you ever see that guy put himself in spots that, you know, he really didn't earn? I don't know if I can really say that. I mean, about Jarrett. You know, I don't look at Jeff Jarrett and have the same despise and disdain that I have for him as I do, you know, Triple H.
Yeah, well, and that's the thing. Like, everybody did it. You know, you talk about Tim Horner. You know, Vern Gagne did it with his son. You know, Fritz did it with the Von Erich boys. You know, anybody that's kind of the head promoter of a territory, they're gonna go to people they trust, and usually that's either them or their family,
right?
Or their close friends. And so, okay. Yeah, from a business sense, I don't fault Jeff for putting himself over. Like, I'm looking at his titles right now in TNA, and he was a 6-time NWA champion back when they were NWA TNA.
Right.
And it's like, okay, like, it probably would have been better for the promotion if he was maybe a 3- or 4-time NWA champion, but I can see why he would want to trust himself, because he knows he's not going to walk out or go to the WWF or, you know, end up drunk somewhere or anything right. like that.
He's going to trust himself. You're right about that. That's true. He's going to trust himself. Well, very interesting, Nate. So go ahead and lay it on me and break it down for me. Who your number one? I got a feeling I know who it is based on who your 2 through 5 were, but who was your number one TNA talent of all time?
Let's see. If you're out there using your clues, you probably already deciphered it. And much like the chief on Karma San Diego, I say good job, Gumshoes, because my number one is AJ Styles.
Yeah.
And the reason I put AJ number one is not just because you can make the argument, Mike, that during his time in TNA, for at least half of that time, he might have been the best wrestler in the world, bell to bell. But I think there is something to being the constant backbone, kind of the constant reset button. And it's a blessing and a curse, because, you know, in the WWE, whenever they kind of reset things, John Cena would always seem to end up with that belt.
Yeah.
And with TNA, whenever they reset things, it was always AJ would be back with the world title, and, you know, either Beer Money or the Dudleys, Team 3D, would end up with the tag titles. You know, because yep. those are the people that they could trust to lead that division. And yep. I think AJ Styles is somebody who I am a huge fan of, even though we probably don't see eye to eye politically, but that's neither here nor there. But just, you know, looking at what he did, man, from the X Division, you know, he was really one of those guys, along with Low Key and Jerry Lynn, who I don't think gets a lot of credit for helping start that division. Elix Skipper and Alex Shelley and Chris Sabin and those guys, like, they really, everything the X Division is what the WWE Cruiserweight Division wishes it could be. Because it actually was compelling, and you could main event a show with the X Division title, and it didn't feel like a gimmick. But he was also, man, one of the things he gets criticized for is his ability to talk. And no, he wasn't The Rock or Ric Flair or anybody like that on the microphone. You know, he wasn't even, you know, somebody like a Christopher Daniels in terms of mic work. But I think AJ was good enough to go with his in-ring ability, which was far above most people's, to make him a complete person. And now, you know, we see now in the WWE, when he gets comfortable on that microphone and having spent time in New Japan, like, he is even better now at an age where he should be breaking down than he might have been in TNA. And so I think the other thing with this list, Mike, is if you talk to 100 people and you say, who's the best wrestler in TNA history? 50 of those people are going to be like, what the fuck is TNA, man? That's what 50 of those people are going to be like. The other 50, I would say most of them would immediately say AJ Styles. And to me, it's kind of like that smell test. Like, if you smell it or if you see it, you like that's a Hall of Famer.
Yeah.
So AJ Styles to me is the best, the greatest TNA star of all time.
Yeah, it's hard to knock it. Like I said, obviously I had Bobby Roode number 2, and my number one, the listeners heard it a couple weeks ago, was Eric Young. But I mean,
really?
I can't knock AJ. See, like, Nate, I'm somebody who just likes the type of heel that Eric Young.
I was gonna say, like, yeah, explain it. Like, I'm not knocking EY, but that's an interesting choice.
I just, the type of heel that he is, Eric Young just resonated with me. I mean, for my money, like, I just looked at him and, man, he pulled off a lot of different gimmicks in his time in TNA.
Yeah.
And he's not the most decorated talent there, I guess. And when I say decorated, I'm thinking of guys like, you know, Bobby Roode or even AJ.
And he was there from the beginning.
But he was there for a very long time. He evolved over that time. And I just think of the great moments that he had with the company. I still go back and to when he ripped Chris Melendez's prosthetic limb off in that angle, which I know a lot of people didn't like, but I thought it was hilarious. And then he's hopping, making the man hop around the ring and completely disrespecting this man who lost his limb and, you know, as a soldier. And I don't know, man. I think of the last year in 2015, you know, he had a good feud with Bobby Roode over in the UK. And he just was always entertaining to me. And then he cut that scathing promo when he left this year, when he was like, I hate everybody. And he was shooting, man. Like, he was talking about everybody in the back, and he was directing it at Dixie. You know he was.
Yep.
But it was just the delivery of it. He can cut a promo with the best of them. I think people underrate EY's promos. He's got that raspy voice, and he's just incredible from that perspective. And
honestly, I think like maybe my favorite run with EY, besides Team Canada, was when he was with when he started World Elite, and he was out there with you know, Doug Williams and Magnus and Homicide. He's, you know, we hate America. It's like a typical anti-American gimmick, but I think he just added something to it because he's that good of a performer. So yeah, I could see the love for EY. I just wouldn't have him at number one on my personal list.
And see, that's why I say the lists are always so subjective, because it's all in what you like. And I like a heel that can get over the way he can, and he got over. I mean, it is nothing against, you know, is AJ the better wrestler of the two? Probably. I mean, he's probably, you know, he does a lot more flying, and I mean, yeah. However, for my money, if I'm spending money on a ticket to go to see a wrestling show, I put EY ahead of him. Now,
and I think
I'm splitting hairs. Yeah. If I say that.
I was gonna say, I think one of the issues with AJ though is EY could absorb a bad gimmick because, you know, the fans took him at a certain level, so it was easy for him to kind of come back from a bad gimmick and repackage himself.
Right.
And then when he finally took that next step and became this crazy heel that won the world championship, it's like, oh, okay, this is different. But I think with AJ, the bad stuff stuck to him a little bit more. Like, I'm thinking when they put him in the robe and tried to make him a mini Flair. Like, that was completely stupid. You know, why would you do this to this guy? You know, he almost had that Sting Ricky Steamboat problem, which might have been a good problem to have, but he never made for a good heel in TNA.
Yeah,
because like those fans, especially the fans that were with TNA from day one, like they were gonna love him regardless. And so every time they tried to make him a heel, it backfired. Because you know we're not gonna boo this guy, and no matter what situation you try to put him in, whether he's Ric Flair Jr. or whether he's trying to make out with Kurt Angle's wife or whatever stupid story you throw him in, we're not going to believe him.
And you know, the thing about that too, Nate, is there you make the Steamboat comparison. There are some guys that are like that. They're just not going to get over as heels. It just doesn't work for them. They're like made to be baby faces. Even now, I mean, AJ is in WWE playing a part of a heel, but if you ask me, I mean, he's getting over. People still like him. Yeah. He's a heel, but they like him.
I don't think it's going to be too long. Like, I think by WrestleMania, AJ will be a baby again.
Whether they want him to or not, he's going to be one because he's likable, because of the character he plays. So, all right, but Nate, that was our top five TNA. I mean, I'm glad you came on to do this. It actually fit in perfect. You know, I needed a co-host this week based on what's going on with my other co-host's schedules. By the way,
I got one more reason for AJ.
Oh, go ahead.
Because the loudest pop I've ever heard live was the Hardcore Justice in Norfolk, Virginia. And it was during the terrible Aces and Eights angle. And it was when AJ was doing the gimmick where he was, you know, the lone wolf AJ Styles, which was terrible. And he came out and everybody thought he was going to be the lone wolf again. And they just played the old theme music. And it was the old AJ. That crowd went crazy. And I've been in the building. I was in Hampton when CM Punk first came back on that Raw where John Cena beat Rey Mysterio for the title. And CM Punk came back, and that was a huge pop. But just comparing apples to apples, I think that AJ Styles pop might have been even louder. And it was at a show that shouldn't have been hot. Like the crowd should have been burned out, because that was at the very end of a night when we've seen two tapings and we've been subjected to a lot of crap, a lot of bad Taz mic work and some other things that I won't get into on this program.
Your boy but, Taz, huh?
Yeah, that's my boy Taz. Shout out to Red Hook. But the way people came back to life when that music hit and AJ jumped over the ring ropes and he was the old character, you can't make this guy heel. Like this, there's a reason. Like this guy is the foundation and the backbone of your company.
Yeah. No, I can see it. Like you said, before Mania, he'll be a face whether they want him to or not. It's just some people are just made to be faces. That's what it boils down to. Well, Nate, man, that was fun, man. I'm glad I got your five, and it was different than mine, but that's why we do them, to get the different perspectives that we get on the top five. So, Nate, before I let you get out of here and before I get to the rest of our plugs, because I got to do some shout-outs to a couple of people on Twitter who always support the show, like Denim Fritz 605, Mullet of Morton, Fake Stan Lane, God Bold Unreal, James Barnett, Holy Moly Oli, McSkills, Tim Horner, the Eye of Gibson, and Fun WWE Polls. I'll let you get in your plugs, everything you got going on in the world of podcasting right now, because you're the podcasting superstar of the two of us.
Hey, you know, somebody's got to be the AJ Styles of this thing, man.
For real.
It's been fun being back here, Brother Mike. And let's see. I hope you guys are writing this down or hitting the rewind button on your app of choice, whether it be iTunes or Stitcher or Podcast Addict, which Brother Mills hit me to. But I have several shows you can catch me on. I'm on the Kings of Sport every week with Marcus Vanderberg. We cover sports, pop culture, occasionally dip into the world of pro wrestling. Mike's been on the show, so if he vouches for it, you should vouch for it too. That's Kings of Sport every week. I've got another show that I do with Felix Olmedo, who is a friend of the program as well. And that is Pipe Bomb Radio. And that is out every other Saturday. So every other Saturday is Pipe Bomb Radio. We've got Place to Be Nation's Clotheslines and Headlines, which is out every other Wednesday. And I think the way it breaks down is every week that there's a pipe bomb, there's not a clothesline. So when there's a clothesline, there's not a pipe bomb. So you can go like every week of the month and hear something I'm on. There's Live Audio Wrestling. We just finished Review America, which was our 9-part series comparing the world of pro wrestling to the recent presidential election, where we saw Great Khali defeat Triple H to become world heavyweight champion or president of the United States. And I've also got a Luke Cage podcast for anybody that's been checking out the Netflix Luke Cage series. It's called Always Forward with myself and Ephraim Guzman. So Kings of Sport, Pipe Bomb Radio, Clotheslines and Headlines, Live Audio Wrestling. Me and Brian Mann, we've got something in the works that you want to look out for, and Always Forward. So it's only five shows you got to subscribe to. And if you want to talk to me and tell me how great I am or disagree with my sound like Jeff Jarrett here, ain't I great? Or if you want to disagree with my TNA list, you can hit me up on Twitter at N8MOZAIK at Nate Mosaic.
Yeah, I don't know how Nate does it, everyone. He's on all these podcasts, and I have trouble recording two per week. So
that's why I don't have time to watch all this WWE content, man.
The man's always cutting podcasts, man. But
it's like, do I record another show or do I watch James Ellsworth? Oh, I guess I'm going to record another show.
Yeah, man, I don't know how you do it, man. Like I said, two a week is busy for me. And, you know, we hold full-time jobs, too. This isn't our podcast and isn't our living like some folks that we know.
It's like we need to find a sponsor.
Yeah, we do, man. Some big ones. Let me say that.
But, maybe some WWE Hall of Famers that want some good publicity.
For real. Oh man, but Nate, it was a good time, man. I enjoyed having you on. You know, we'll definitely do this again sometime. You came in as a pinch hitter with when Doc and Harper couldn't make it this week, so I'm always appreciative of that. Thank you very much for doing so. Everybody, before we get out of here, and after I let Nate go, we got the promos of the week, and then we got a bunch of shout-outs and a bunch of information related to the show that we're going to discuss in a minute. So I want to thank Nate again for his time. Nate, I appreciate it. You're welcome back anytime, man.
Hey, appreciate that, Brother Mike. It's always fun catching up with you and booking some territories, and I look forward to the next time we get on these mics.
Sounds good, man. I appreciate it. Thanks again, my brother Nate Milton, for coming and joining me on this week's episode of Booking the Territory Pro Wrestling Podcast. Nate's a good dude. He's been on the show a bunch of times now. I was in a pinch this week, as you guys heard. No Doc Turner, no Hardbody Harper. Hardbody Harper was actually recording commentary for Wildcat Sports' TV show that launched about a month ago now. I guess actually close to 2 months ago now. So Harper couldn't join us this week, and it's cool, man. I know he's got obligations, and Doc was on a business trip, believe it or not. He was actually doing something constructive with his time. Imagine that. I want to thank you all again for checking out the show. Just a couple of things before we get out of here and get to the promo of the week. First off, please, if you are a first-time listener, subscribe to us however you get your podcast, whether it's iTunes, Podbean, Stitcher, Podcast Addict, or TuneIn Radio. And please, on iTunes, write us a 5-star review. We'd greatly appreciate it. We got 35 stars right now. I'd appreciate if we could get about 30 more of those, and then 30 more of those, and 30 more of those. It would be great. It helps out the show a lot. It helps out the algorithms. And the more 5-star reviews we have, the higher we are up on iTunes' charts, and the more ears get put on the product. Also, please retweet the show, share the show on Facebook, any form of social media. Put the show out there for us and help us out. If you enjoy what we do, your retweets, your shares on Facebook, whenever we post it on our Facebook page, that all helps out greatly. While I'm talking about that, follow us on Twitter. I am at Mike504Saints. The podcast Twitter is at BTT_podcast. Harper, Hardbody Harper from Wildcat Sports, is at CJHWhoDat, although he rarely checks his Twitter, as we always say. And check out our YouTube channel when you get a chance. I post a lot of different things on there. Sometimes it's the full show, sometimes it's other stuff, but check it out. Also, I got some shout-outs for this week. I want to shout-out at FunWWEPolls. I also want to shout-out at DenimFritz605. Shout-out at Mullet of Morton, Fake Stan Lane, Godbold Unreal. Godbold, you give me a hard time all the time. I'm giving you a shout-out right now, though, brother. At James E. Barnett, man, that dude is always tweeting out our Smoky Mountain shows, and I really am appreciative of that. At Holy Moly Oli, man, thank you, man, too, checking us out. At Mike Skills Tim, it seems that our Smoky Mountain wrestling show has spawned off a character named Mike Skills Tim Horner. If you don't know who Tim Horner is, I suggest you check out our Smoky Mountain review shows, and you will get a damn kick out of that. I mean, it's just comedy. That's all I can tell you. And then I got a shout-out, of course, at the Eye of Gibson. If I missed you, my apologies. I really didn't mean to. If you enjoy the show, you know I'm about to plug it. Check out our Amazon link. Donate to us on PayPal. Please do so. Amazon and PayPal, if you just go to mikemills.podbean.com, at the very top of that page, you will see the links that will take you to our Amazon referral link and our PayPal link. I say it every week, whether it's $1, $2, whatever, please donate. If you don't donate, no biggie. We enjoy doing the show for free for you. However, if you're already buying something on Amazon, please click that link on Amazon and then bookmark that. And each time you go to Amazon, you will be supporting the show. It's a little bit, it's a small percentage of what you buy. You're not spending any extra money, but it greatly helps us out, and we would definitely, definitely appreciate it. Also, don't forget, we got our Pro Wrestling Tees store. Check out our Pro Wrestling Tees. It's also at the very top of the page, mikemills.podbean.com. Pro Wrestling Tees store is right there. Click on it, and it'll take you to the link that can take you to the page. And then check us out on Facebook, facebook.com/bookingtheterritory. And I post a lot of shows there. I want to ask all the listeners while I'm talking about Facebook right now, please comment on the shows. I mean, we don't have a very interactive Facebook page right now. We got a lot of listeners on there, but no one really interacts and posts on there. So, hey, if you like something with the show, post it there. If you hate something with the show, post it there. It's all good. Hopefully you're enjoying it enough where you'll start commenting on the Facebook page. I do need to thank our sponsor, The Wrestling Palace, located in Traders Village. For those of you in the Dallas-Fort Worth area, they're your one-stop shop for your wrestling memorabilia needs. If you are not in the DFW area, my buddy Arturo will ship to you. Just call him, 469-337-8537. When I tell you he's got everything just about with the exception of maybe like real replica belts. I don't know if he's got that, but he's pretty much got everything else. So check him out. Give him a call. The Wrestling Palace, located in Traders Village. And if you're in the Dallas area, heck, go see him. He's got all kind of stuff on there. Keep those emails coming to bookingtheterritory@gmail.com. Those future top five discussions. Anything you want discussed on WWE, ROH, TNA, keep it coming. And lastly, before we get to the promos of the week, a couple of things. Shout out King of the Mountain Podcast. They're back. They're doing their Impact Wrestling reviews. Also, shout out to the greatest classic wrestling podcast there is, the 605 Super Podcast with my friend, the great Brian Lass, who is also on the Jim Cornette Experience weekly. Brian produces a spectacular show. They had a really, really good discussion this week with Bobby Fulton from the show, from the Fantastics. He talked a lot about, not a lot, but he talked a little about Smoky Mountain Wrestling and some stories about the Junkyard Dog, so you might want to check that out. And he also had on a great co-host, Bobby Blaze, who should be coming to Booking the Territory soon because I've been in touch with him. He's a former Smoky Mountain Wrestling heavyweight champion, and Bobby's going to be on Booking the Territory very soon. Not sure if he's going to be on the Smoky Mountain show or this show, or heck, we may do both. We'll see, but more news to come on that, so hang tight. And, you know, like I said, about, and the other thing about Brian Lass is the dude is a classic wrestling expert and genius, so he's just got it down, man. He really does. I recommend you check out his show. And then the only other show I want to promote before we get out of here is the Wrestling Podcast About Nothing with my buddies Mike Crockett and the Kingpin, Brian Malonis. Check them out. Their shows drop every Sunday night around the same time. Well, actually a little bit later than our Smoky Mountain show. And if you haven't checked out our Smoky Mountain Wrestling Podcast on Sunday nights, I suggest you do so. I think you'll like the classic look back. It's a unique show. It's something that I don't think anyone else is doing. It's a retrospective look back recap review of Jim Cornette's classic promotion, Smoky Mountain Wrestling, that ran from 1992 through 1996. Or was it 95? Shit, I forget right now. I'm going through so much stuff as I'm recapping the show. But great, great promotion. I'm sure you'll enjoy it. Check it out. Doc and I are having a lot of fun. Between Ron Wright, Tim Horner, Mr. Wonderful Paul Orndorff, Jim Cornette, the Heavenly Bodies, they've got so much talent there. It's very entertaining. Some of it's really cheesy. Some of it's really funny. Some of it's just good old school wrestling. Some of it's great angles. Just a lot of good shit all wrapped up into one with Smoky Mountain Wrestling, and I think you will enjoy it as we are. So that is all I have. Matter of fact, this week's promo of the week is coming from an upcoming episode of our Smoky Mountain Wrestling show that we're doing. It's Stan Lane cutting – yes, Stan Lane from the Midnight Express, now of the Heavenly Bodies in Smoky Mountain Wrestling, now as of 1992, that is. Stan Lane cutting a promo about being sexually harassed by the fat, greasy women in the Smoky Mountain area. That's all I have this week. Thank you again for tuning in as you do each and every week. For Mike and Doc and Harper, you know what we always say before we get out of here and before the promo of the week, book it, bitch.
All right. Yeah. Hey, they're great. I mean, they look tremendous in there, Jim.
Let me tell you something. As every woman in this building fully well realizes, this is the hottest thing going in sports today, brother. And Danny Davis, and especially you, Joey Maggs, you think your neck hurts now? It's going to look like a rubber band after next week when we get finished stretching you and that little munchkin Danny Davis on our march to the Smoky Mountain Tag Team Championship. The gangster of love and the doctor of desire, Stan Lane, Tom Pritchard, the Heavenly Bodies, are going to wear the gold around their waist. Right, Stanfield?
I want to talk about something today that's of utmost importance to the Heavenly Bodies. No, I'm not talking about tag team tournaments. I'm not talking about wrestling rankings. I'm talking about something that's very, very important to us. I'm talking sexual harassment.
That's right.
Wow. Let me tell you something. These poor, deprived, fat, corn-fed women, ever since the Heavenly Bodies have come to Smoky Mountain Wrestling, have been groping, have been pawing at us in a sexual way, and we're sick of it. I'm going to notify the authorities. I've already talked to Commissioner Bob Armstrong, and we're going to put a stop to this. You keep your nasty, greasy, sweaty, fat palms off the Heavenly Bodies, or I'm going to have to contact the authorities and have something done about it.
That's exactly right. That's exactly right. We will press some charges But what's more important, we're going to press Danny Davis and Joey Maggs next week, and then we're going to press and press and press till we go to the Volunteer Slam, May 22nd, the Knoxville Civic Coliseum, where that gold, as a matter of fact, we're going to have new belts made because the belts don't look good enough for these heavenly bodies. Let's get out of here, guys.
All right, fans, Jim Cornette and the Heavenly Bodies, you heard it. We'll be back right after this.